Well, first, what are the ambitions and the realities of producing a COVID vaccine here? A leading New Zealand scientist is calling for long-term security of vaccine supply through self-sufficiency. Professor Graham LeGros of the Maligan Institute of Medical Research says it's not only viable, but vital. He is a director of Vaccine Alliance Aotearoa New Zealand, a consortium of the Maligan Institute and Otago and Victoria Universities to research and develop a COVID vaccine in this country. Professor LeGros says the initial investment by the government has enabled some progress, but more investment and a longer-term view is needed if we're to ensure our ongoing access to safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines, including, of course, changes through variants. Professor LeGros is currently in conversations with scientists in the UK who've approached New Zealand to join a consortium to produce a next-level mRNA vaccine. Tomorrow, Australia's holding a roundtable discussion with world-leading experts to map out Australia's national priorities for RNA science and research. Professor LeGros says New Zealand needs to invest another $50 million to get ahead and reach for this next level of vaccine research and development. Kia ora and welcome, Graham. Good to have you here.
Kia ora, Marina, Catherine.
Let's begin at the beginning. What was the brief for the initial $35 million from the government?
Yeah. The original brief was insurance for just about everything. Give some money to COVAX to help countries which cannot afford a vaccine to actually buy some of the vaccine that would be available. Also add to CEPI, the international consortium trying to review how vaccines should be developed and grown over the next years, and $10 million to New Zealand's own initiative, just in case everything overseas goes to pot, and can we make our own vaccines here? Because remember, Catherine, we actually make vaccines in New Zealand. We make animal vaccines. We just require the same level of efficiency and power, and we also make medical products that go into humans. So we have the technology.
So the $10 million that was dedicated towards exploring our own vaccine, where have things got with that?
Very exciting. Actually, I can't believe in 1 year we actually have two lead candidates. One's actually sourced from Australia. One's actually a local candidate, beavering through and looking very exciting in terms of the way they can neutralise and the tests we've actually developed here, neutralising virus, COVID-19 virus, and also getting ready for the next very important stage. How do you prepare for manufacturing? How do you prepare scale up so we can do a limited phase one clinical study?
So you are at a point of getting close to clinical, theoretically getting close to clinical trial?
1 year. 1 year. We've actually got a lead candidate. We now have to just make sure it hit all the boxes are ticked around its neutralising ability. We've got this horrible situation now with these new variants, the Delta variant. Does it work against Delta? Does it work against this and that? What is its long-term consequences? You know, a bit of toxicity testing. We've got to go through about another year's worth of work to find out if it's actually the one.
Now, let's do some stuff that needs to be done, which is to talk about two different kinds of vaccines.
Yeah.
Very helpfully, we had the creators of the AstraZeneca vaccine on the program last week, so listeners would have learnt a lot if they were tuned into that, the two scientists who invented it. It is a viral vector vaccine.
Yeah.
The Pfizer vaccine being used here in New Zealand is an mRNA vaccine.
Yeah.
Which type of vaccine has the consortium here been working on?
We've been working on the traditional viral vector or actually protein expression. This is a safe way of doing that, but we can very easily convert that to an RNA form, and that's the ultimate plan. And at the moment, we're using existing technology because that's what exists in New Zealand, but we see a real opportunity to innovate and get into the new platform technology of RNA. We can be one of the first in the countries in the world here.
Okay, so bear with me while we finish where we're at now.
Yeah.
What the AstraZeneca scientists told us is the reason they were able to move so incredibly quickly was they had for a decade been working on a platform.
Yeah.
They'd got a basic vaccine platform,
yeah,
and it could adapt to any new virus. What you needed was the relevant DNA bit of code.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually put this thing together in what felt like days.
Yeah.
Okay, obviously all the trials had to happen.
Yes, yeah.
So do we have a similar platform? Because part of what you're arguing is this isn't for this current pandemic, it's for whatever, however long it goes and whatever follows.
Yeah.
Do we have a similar platform?
Yeah. At the moment, we have an existing platform, but it does take years. It's using the traditional technology. With the RNA platform, we can bring that timescale right down to 1 year, for instance, because the actual chemistry of the RNA vaccine is the same, no matter what the different viral component is. with the traditional vaccines, even the AstraZeneca vaccine, they have to do a lot of testing because it is quite different, and you've got to do a lot of safety testing to make sure it doesn't pick up something new. If you remember, Australia came out with a similar style vaccine. It actually cross-reacted and made people falsely positive for HIV infection. There's a lot of things that need to be tested when you use those protein or traditional viral vector vaccines.
So the protein or the viral vector, are they more organic, can I put it that way? Is the mRNA more synthetic?
It's more synthetic, right. It's more defined, it's actually just one component, and in fact exploits the fact that our body's own cells make the protein. It's much safer, it's much more direct, it's much more specific.
Messenger RNA, for those of us trying to rip back to our sixth form biology or whatever, the RNA is what within the cell? What is the messenger RNA?
People know DNA and people know proteins. RNA is the thing that DNA makes, and it's a very short-lived chemical species that then gets translated through into protein. It's a messenger. It's got a very short half-life, seconds to minutes, and then it disappears. The RNA vaccines actually exploit that, and they just, with lipid nanoparticles, introduce the RNA inside a cell, and for a period of time, they just start making protein, and they make just the viral spike protein.
That's what we want, of course, is say, whatever vaccine. Yes. You don't want the virus. You want spike protein that is the reason this is such a beast.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And remember, some viruses, they actually make a lot of other proteins just to fool the immune system and say, hey, make antibody responses to here. You just want the one thing that the virus really needs.
And then you want the immune system to recognise the spike. And when the real spike comes along, it's got a reaction.
And you want the recognition and the kind of immune response to be one that neutralises it, actually really pulls apart the virus and prevents it from infecting other cells. That's the other thing.
Again, this is the Pfizer, which I think has still got the leading results, right?
Pfizer, Moderna, because they're so defined, so specific, and you don't have all the other things going on. You just actually have this one part of the virus that you need to make the immune response to.
Now, come back to where you've got so far, though, and where we're at with readiness for any further stages. We spoke last week to Dr. William Ralston, whose company, South Pacific Sierra, is part of this consortium.
Yes.
Now, can you explain, as he did, where they're at with ability to produce? Their day job is the animal vaccines, as you say, but where are they at as part of this theoretical process to produce here?
We are full on working because, in fact, there's a lot of thinking that has to go in. How do you actually introduce a R&D pipeline linking to manufacturing and then, most importantly, GMP manufacturing, which is good manufacturing practice? You need to have a safe vaccine made safely with all the reagents accounted for and knowing where they come from.
That's actually a global standard for pharmaceuticals.
A global standard, there's two levels of checking vaccine safety. Is it designed the right way? Does it work well on people? But actually, all factories are tested. We actually have a GMP lab here at the Mulligan Institute where we make CAR T-cells for cancer therapy. We get audited every 6 months to make sure everything is up to standard. That's what you need to have. That's what William Rolleston has down in Timaru.
So they're at a point where, in theory, if you had these clinical trials and everything went well over a period of years, they would take typically production. They're at a point where production would be feasible.
Yeah, they already have what's called fill and finish. They can put them in little glass vials, and actually that's a big deal around the world, having enough glass vials and these little machines or robots that actually can fill and finish the vials in a safe and reliable way and put the same dose in. William's got that really squared away right now. That's what he does right now. Where he needs to scale up and where he needs to develop is actually linking with the new RNA technology, and that's where the VANS platform comes in, I think, linking all the R&D, because remember, we've got a lot of new science has to be done around the RNA. We've heard with CureVac recently, it's not just that everyone who makes RNA vaccines works. CureVac had a bit of a setback that they only got 50% effectiveness with their vaccine. So not all RNA works just as well as the Moderna and Pfizer. So we have a lot to learn, and we have to make better and better vaccines.
So what you're saying is, let's pivot from the focus on the viral vector AstraZeneca, which is what Australia's making at the moment, right? Let's pivot and in the future look at moving into the mRNA vaccines, which is the Pfizer's and the Moderna's, and let's become serious candidates as part of international partnerships to produce here.
Absolutely.
That's what you are saying.
I'm saying New Zealand has a fantastic opportunity to get ahead of the pack and innovate because we're small and nimble, in targeted investment, and then we can link with some of the leading groups around the world, in the US, in the UK, in Australia. Now, remember, a lot of the current vaccine development and manufacturing is because they've invested so heavily in the traditional AstraZeneca-type approaches. They need 1,000-litre containers, which are very sterile, to make their viral vector vaccines. With the RNA vaccine, you only need a 12-litre. You know, if you just think in terms of milk bottles, it's amazing. You can make enough vaccine in 12 litres or 20 litres of the RNA platform for all of New Zealand and the Pacific. It's a great, groundbreaking new technology.
Well, let's look at what others are doing before I ask the obvious, which is Pfizer supplies are now arriving in their hundreds of thousands, so problem solved.
Yeah. We'll come to that, and I want to deal with that.
So let's come to that question of why produce here. But first, let's talk about what others are doing and what you're doing. Mm. What are the conversations you've had with the UK? The UK has a government agency which is called...
The Vaccine Task Force. Their name changes all the time as they move along.
It's called something else. Yeah, it's a government agency, a research agency. It is the one that has been initially looking at working with the CureVac vaccine, which is a big giant pharmaceutical. What are they doing now, and what are the conversations you're having with them?
Well, one of the big issues is having distributed manufacturing. We realise as a global population, it's no point just having one country with all the vaccine being produced in one place. And there's an ability or the opportunity with the RNA technology to actually have distributed manufacturing sites around the world. And in fact, we already know for the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine, it's not all made in one place. So New Zealand has some unique abilities. We have some fantastic scientists. We could actually play our part in making vaccine for the rest of the world. And who knows, the next pandemic may actually require that vaccine is made in New Zealand. We're the safest place to make a vaccine.
Innovate UK, I found, the government agency, which is looking into the mRNA production. But what are the conversations you're having with them? Have they said, hey, do you want to be involved, New Zealand and the Alliance, in this development we're doing?
Yeah. First of all, they ask us, what are we doing? And we're saying, hey, we want to pivot to RNA. They say, well, we're interested too. And then we start talking about, well, what are you going to use? What kind of platform? Because there's many companies out there making these RNA platform technologies. We need to make sure we're aligned. We need to make sure that we've actually got the appropriate people and types of research-funded programs in place that something like UK, the Alliance UK, can actually bid in with. That's why I need the government support, the New Zealand government support, because you're not going to just deal with a little private company or our own little research organisation. We need to have a committed national consensus around this.
What I'm not understanding is why a UK government agency, Innovate UK, is interested in us being involved with
them. Why? You think we're too small?
Explain
the prejudice, because
the prejudice is why have they come to you? They come to you because they respect the science and they want the science involved.
Respect the science. There's a lot of interchange. We're part of CEPI, which is the global international consortium looking at the way vaccines are designed and about the new ones coming through. We play our role there. We have top scientists. Actually, we're reviewing the AstraZeneca vaccine. David Murdoch was over there helping them go through safety studies.
So they want our scientists.
Exactly. Science is international.
Number two, Australia. As we said, currently producing the AstraZeneca under licence, so the old
committed, style invested, heavily invested in that old style technology.
Okay, it is helping save lives at the moment, so
we're not ridiculing it. Please, Catherine, no.
We'll take it for now. So that's what they're doing currently. Tomorrow there is a roundtable in Australia that is equally looking forward. Yeah. Who is part of that roundtable and what are they looking at and mapping out their future from here?
The large part, they're actually RNA scientists who actually haven't been normally deeply involved because it's only so new. They've only been involved in researching. How do you cap the RNA? How do you make it stable? How do you make it safe? How do you give it some extra bits so it's actually a better vaccine entity? So they're looking at where they can get some pilot material made, and they see that we've got here this VANS platform already linking up. We're so much further ahead than many other groups around the world in trying to engage with the RNA production technology. We have some great expertise around lipid chemistry and nanoparticles, which actually encapsulate the RNA. We're actually ahead, believe it or not, in some of these areas, very important areas about delivering RNA vaccines or RNA material in a lipid nanoparticle.
So you're part of that roundtable. They're interested in what we're doing.
And the New Zealand government's also interested too.
And they are, okay. So the Australian government and scientists are looking at pivoting towards the mRNA for the future. What is our government communicating with you about its forward thinking?
We haven't had our latest meeting, but we try and keep in regular contact because, remember, they fund us. This is part of our remit as the VANS platform, and we actually report, hey, we're ready to go with this RNA thing. Are you ready to do a deal on this? This is what it looks like. Because you've got to put a number of things together. Is there capability? Is there interest? What is the capability? What are the costs? And do we have those international linkages? And I think all the boxes tick up, and so do my other colleagues, and I think so do the Australians and the UK people, and they want to work with us.
So has the New Zealand government got any role in this roundtable tomorrow?
Yes, they have. They know what's going on. And they're looking at this space very closely because they're charged with responsibility to make sure New Zealand's resilient for the future. They know that there'll be another coronavirus or other pandemic in at least 10 years' time. We have to be prepared. We've lost a lot of money. No one talks about the costs of actually how much the vaccine costs at the moment. Hundreds of millions of dollars. And here we are talking about very modest investment with the potential to make our own vaccines for New Zealand Pacific faster, better. We were very lucky. We dodged several bullets so far.
We're still dodging them, Graham.
We were still dodging. It's like this. We're rocking around.
So tell me what it would look like if all went to plan and New Zealand scientists and New Zealand production happened here. Would it be in collaboration potentially with one or more countries and one or more pharmaceuticals? What are you working towards?
It would have to be in collaboration. All those words that you just said have to be international, have to be collaboration, but we can play a role. Now, another very important part, when you collaborate in the international consortiums, then you actually get to know what's coming down the pipeline. You actually understand. It doesn't. You don't get caught flat-footed around new vaccine designs, and you can introduce it into the country much quicker.
For production to happen here, let's talk about it in two steps. Australia got licensed to produce AstraZeneca there.
Yeah.
Could we, as an interim step, get to the point where we could similarly, under licence, produce here, or is there a size factor that says, Pfizer says, we'll ship them to you.
Yeah, with the older technology, the AstraZeneca technology, there's a real size factor. We're talking about 1,000 litre, 2,000 litre.
Yeah, but what about Pfizer's? Because Pfizer is mRNA.
Yes. Now, with Pfizer, with the RNA, very much so. We could easily convert and develop things here for that.
So that's my point. Is there another barrier that we're not seeing, which is a giant pharmaceutical producing, I don't know, where is it producing most of its vaccines? A lot of them come out of India, don't they?
Yeah,
India,
Europe, the States,
Germany.
Depends.
So has it got any reason to give license to New Zealand to produce here?
The status of having GMP manufacturing is a much fought for status. And so, yes, the fact that there's a quality manufacturing ability.
So then why haven't we been able to achieve that or sought to achieve it? Or why isn't that the next step to seek to do that, to produce their vaccine here instead of coming up with our own?
I'll slow down here. Pfizer may have no financial incentive. Remember, they are a pharmaceutical company that has to return investment to the shareholders. So they may want to keep it all under control. Also, there's a safety and a reliability factor that they can actually just control when it's their own space. But actually, if they go to understand what we can produce here, they may find in their strategic interest to actually have some investment elsewhere. Now, the other thing is, we're talking a lot about COVID-19 spike protein. There are other vaccines. There are infectious diseases of interest to New Zealand, the Pacific, the Philippines, that maybe are amenable to RNA vaccine technology. We would actually be in a position, if we develop the RNA platform, to develop vaccines for ourselves. And that's critical. I'm not going to say it. I'm just saying there's speculation. We suffer a lot from rheumatic heart fever, and it's hard to see how RNA vaccine technology could help there. But that's a local, indigenous New Zealand issue. It really drives a lot of poverty and inequity. We should actually use the RNA and see if we can make a vaccine for our own, chart our own destiny.
The poverty and inequity, unfortunately, is what drives the rheumatic fever, but that's another whole subject.
But a vaccine, innovation sometimes solves problems.
But what I'm trying to get to is, even if we've got the great scientists, and even if we've got the potential to produce here, and we've got the GMP status to produce here, is there a reason why the big pharmaceutical companies that were involved in these consortiums would say, no, you're not worth it, we'll just ship it to you? You know, because otherwise, isn't that what we're working on?
Of course they would, and then they control everything, and they control, and every year they give us a boost, and then we have to pay hundreds of millions of dollars every year to the vaccine company. If we make our own one, we may make a better vaccine that actually gives 10 years' worth of immunity against the variant that circulates in New Zealand.
That's moving away from the idea that this would be a consortium involving large pharmaceuticals.
It could do, but it depends. You always have different size concerns. The big one, like Pfizer, they own the space right now. We need some competition. There'll be some other players in the pharmaceutical game, and they'll want to do deals with the consortiums to actually help and take things through.
So what do you want right now in order to progress along this path? Because you've got two candidates, you say. One you estimate is a year off clinical trials, and that's for the current COVID-19 virus.
That's the ambition.
Virus, right. You've got a producer, at least one producer of vaccines who is in a position to pivot and to scale up if this will to become possible. What do you need to begin to build? You've got the partnerships that you're starting to explore. What do you need now to make progress? What is your message to the government and anyone else listening?
I'm not going to... The government have been good, actually. They really... First of all, they took a brave move into setting us up as an insurance policy for New Zealand. And I think we just had a good conversation with the government. I don't think there's any resistance from the government. The only thing that does scare me a little bit is I hear there are voices around the public space talking about we don't need a vaccine in New Zealand. We don't need that kind of resilience. We're just not investing. We can just let everyone else do it and we just sit on our hands.
So is that happening with inside the bureaucracy right now?
I would imagine so. Yes, I've heard voices in public. And I just want to put those to slap those down and say, guys and girls, we're New Zealanders, we need to be ambitious. We need to develop our own platform technologies, develop our own, chart our own course in the world. Good God, I know we're only 5 million people, but actually we've spent a lot of money in science and innovation. Let's make it work for New Zealand.
How much does it need to get to the next stage?
Well, I was extracted out of you $50 million. How the hell do I know if it's $50 million? But actually, it's a good start and would create a reliable long-term platform based on our current costs. And in fact, that's what the government did. They gave us $10 million to see what does it cost to develop a vaccine platform for New Zealand that can actually pivot and move around. The RNA technology is amazing the way, if its potential is realised, we would actually be a low-cost solution to what is hundreds of millions of dollars of a Pfizer vaccine every year. And we're already hearing that we need a booster next year. I don't think we should aim for having a booster every year against COVID-19. We need to think about a vaccine that lasts for 10 years.
You're also asking if there's any downside when we know we have great scientists here and we know we lose them at the rate of knots overseas. And if you're looking at future science demands, obviously climate is enormous, environment is enormous, but actually as an offshoot of that, more frequent pandemics.
More frequent.
Look, and other
I
illnesses.
Think we're just going to have to get over that. Actually, every 10 years or 20 years, there's a coronavirus pandemic.
So the point is, it'll become a strong and significant and practical arm of our scientific research.
Dingy, you'll be down here. You know, just think about it. You know, we've got to make ourselves resilient against a changing world. It's not going to stay the same as it has in the past. We've had an infectious disease quiescent period of the last 50 years we've enjoyed, but mass transport, mass movement of people makes pandemics now a real regular possibility.
Does your brief need updating at some point, if not your funding? Like,
absolutely.
When does this happen? Like, you were sent on your journey, and I know everyone's busy, but when will that happen?
Exactly. I suppose I've got a responsibility. I'll raise my voice. I'll talk in a quiet, calm way. I think government will listen. It's in their interests. You know, voters will vote them in or out based on how well they listen. And I think we need to make a good plan for the future. It's not just us. I think it's engaging with all the capability around New Zealand. I think we're just the start of engaging good sciences and technology from around New Zealand in a bigger, ambitious program.
It is always enlightening and enjoyable. Thank you. Professor Graeme Le Gros of the Melligan Institute of Medical Research. He is Director of Vaccine Alliance Aotearoa New Zealand. That's a consortium of the Melligan Institute, Otago, Victoria University of Wellington, and as you've heard also, South Sea Sierra and others.
South Pacific Sierra.
Thank you. I'm going all literary on it. It's